Hey friends, welcome back to Potter Plus, your podcasting home for the upcoming Harry Potter television show and so much more. I'm your host, William, and there are some things that I need to clear up right out of the gate before we begin. Unless I've changed my mind, titling this episode Finishing Fantastic Beasts may lead you to believe that I'm giving up, that I'm giving up hope, that the story of Newt is over. I need to be understood. And I want to be very clear, this is in no means an admission of defeat. This is merely an audio reference for Warner Brothers when they do decide to continue the story. I give you my full blessing. Here, all of the ideas, consider this a nice little time capsule of where you should go with the story. All I ask in return is annual passes to Universal from now until forever. I don't think that's a whole lot to ask. But yes, today I am finishing the Fantastic Beasts series. I know it seems like it's over. It seems like Newt has hung up the scarf, he's put away the briefcase, and we need to refocus our energies on the upcoming Harry Potter television show. I get that. But David Yates, while promoting his film Pain Hustlers on the Inside Total Film podcast, had some interesting things to say about the future of the franchise.
You know what we're doing with Beast for a minute is it's all just parked. We made those three movies. We made the last one through the pandemic, and it was enormous fun, but it was tough. We were actually filming when there wasn't a vaccine. Thank goodness no one got sick, but we put the most detailed protocols in place. And then we got to the end of FB3, and we're all so proud of that movie. And when we went out into the world, we just needed to sort of stop and pause and take it easy.
When asked if there have been conversations, he said,
I haven't spoken to Joe, and I haven't spoken to David Heyman, I haven't spoken to Warner Brothers, we're just taking a pause. And it's quite nice, and it allows me to do stuff like this and other things I've got lined up that I'm excited about. But I'm sure at some point, Newt may well be back.
See? I told you. Hey, why don't you just pull up a chair and settle in and, oh, no, not there. And hey, can you just ignore all of the newspaper clippings, the push pins, and the yarn. Anyways.
There is no Pepe Sylvia. The man does not exist.
So why does the Fantastic Beasts series being, quote, parked in the setting of the Harry Potter television show mean anything? Well, in January of 2024, Deadline reported that, quote, there may also be an opportunity for more than one of these writers to be involved, and that Max is open to the possibility of developing more than one idea based off of Harry Potter. Oh, I will get into the wider ramifications of that statement in a future episode. But when it comes to the Fantastic Beasts and the Harry Potter television show, it's important to understand timelines here. Mr. Jim Dale, the narrator of many of our childhoods, take it away, sir.
Albus Dumbledore, currently headmaster of Hogwarts. Considered by many the greatest wizard of modern times, Dumbledore is particularly famous for his defeat of the dark wizard Grindelwald in 1945, for the discovery of the 12 uses of dragon's blood, and his work on alchemy with his partner Nicholas Flamel. Professor Dumbledore enjoys chamber music and tenpin bowling.
Oh, the amount of detail in that one paragraph alone, I think, is hugely critical for the rest of this entire series. However, we are focusing on timelines. I think it is fairly safe to say that this entire Fantastic Beasts series is headed toward that legendary defeat in 1945. I also do not think it's a coincidence that the Fantastic Beasts series started in 1926, the year Voldemort was born. The most recent installment, The Secrets of Dumbledore, took place in 1932. Okay, why does all of this matter? Well, in the Harry Potter television show, during the season dedicated to the Chamber of Secrets, there will be an episode dedicated to a flashback of when the Chamber of Secrets was opened for the first time. And if my math is correct, Harry James Potter was born in 1980, started at Hogwarts in 1991, his second year occurred in 1992, and the Chamber was opened 50 years prior in 1942. I cannot shake the feeling that the flashback episode when Harry goes into Tom Riddle's diary and experiences the events of Hagrid's capture is going to be the backdoor pilot to finish the Fantastic Beasts. I just know it. So let's do it. Let's finish it. I think we have pretty well established that the fourth installment is going to take place in 1942 with the opening of the Chamber of Secrets, and the fifth installment and final installment will be the legendary duel between Dumbledore and Grindelwald. And by finishing Fantastic Beasts, I mean wrapping up the storylines and introducing some characters that if their omission from the series would be just a travesty. It was reported that with Fantastic Beasts, The Secrets of Dumbledore, Warner Brothers wrote in some soft endings, this could end here and nobody would be upset. But it leaked that they were having those soft endings, and I think that's what tanked it in a self-fulfilling prophecy kind of way. That's what tanked it in the beginning. So I am going to start out with with just a bit of revisionist history here. Okay, so hear me out. There was a theory that implanted into my brain as to the true identity of Credence, or Aurelius Dumbledore. And when I got to the movie and they said, oh, it's Aberforth's son, I sat back in my chair and went, huh. Well, I mean, I guess. And the more I thought about it, I just thought, no, this is when my headcanon is taking over. And this is the identity of Credence Fairbones or Aurelius Dumbledore. Okay, hold on to your hat. The incomparable Jim Dale has already said that Dumbledore is famous for his work in alchemy with his partner, Nicholas Flamel. We saw Nicholas Flamel in The Crimes of Grindelwald. You even got a glimpse of the Sorcerer's Stone in his cabinet as he's walking out of the house. Now, why was that important? Why was it so important that it made its way onto his card? Well, if you look into the history of the Philosopher's Stone, legend does say that it has some of the properties that were present in the Harry Potter books. It can turn any metal into gold, and it can produce the Elixir of Life. However, there was one feature of the Philosopher's Stone that was not mentioned. It's implied later on in the actual book, but that magical feature is the ability to create a homunculus, what essentially amounts to a flesh body without soul. I remember being 11, reading the Philosopher's Stone, thinking, well, what good is all the money in the world and the ability to live forever by drinking this elixir of life going to do you if you don't have any lips to drink it? He doesn't have a body. Is he going to continue to inhabit people and hope that he can trust their intentions? But then, in his monologue at the end of the Philosopher's Stone, Voldemort says something that I think is hugely critical. Here's Jim Dale again.
Unicorn blood has strengthened me these past weeks. You saw Faithful Quirrell drinking it for me in the forest. And once I have the elixir of life, I will be able to create a body of my own. Now, why don't you give me that stone in your pocket?
Voldemort knew of the stone's ability to create a flesh body without soul because of Dumbledore's work in alchemy with his partner, Nicholas Flamel. This was Voldemort's answer. Him being what is effectively a soul without body, now having the ability to create a body without soul, something that he can create, he can control and inhabit, and he does not have to worry about a mind or a consciousness to fight against him. It was a direct line to return to power physically in the flesh. I think Dumbledore succeeded in creating a homunculus because of his sister, Ariana. We learn in the third Fantastic Beasts movies that Ariana was indeed an Obscurus. Many of us suspected this based on the description of how her magic just burst forth from her when she couldn't control it in the Deathly Hallows. However, there is a line from Newt in the first movie that I think is crucial to understanding this entire thing. And he said that line while he was being interrogated by Percival Graves. Here it is.
It's an Obscurus. But it's not what you think, so I managed to separate it from the Sudanese girl as I tried to save her. So I wanted it to get home to study it. But it cannot survive outside that. It could not hurt anyone, Tina.
This is what makes the entire Obscurus mystery make sense. It's what ties it to Dumbledore. It's what ties it to Ariana. It's what ties it to Nicholas Flamel. Dumbledore manages to separate Ariana's Obscurus prior to her death. Because of his correspondence with Newt, He conveys how it's done, and he is able to separate an Obscurus from a Sudanese girl prior to her death. Grindelwald, Dumbledore, and Aberforth duel. Ariana dies. Dumbledore is distraught, but he has this spectral, ephemeral remnant of his sister, and in his grief, rushes to Nicholas Flamel, desperate to create a body in hopes that it could bring his sister back. But because we're not cloning Ariana, it just creates a flesh body, and in this instance, creates a male infant into which they transplant the Obscurus. They are explicitly clear that Credence is an anomaly. Normally, if you have an Obscurus, you don't live past 10 or 11, but how has he made it into his 20s? It's because he was not a wizard child that developed an Obscurus. He was an Obscurus that gained a wizard child. This also sheds so much clarity on the line that Grindelwald says to Credence at the end of The Crimes of Grindelwald.
You have suffered the most heinous of betrayals by your own blood, your own flesh and blood. Your brother seeks to destroy you. There is a legend in your family that a phoenix will come to any member who is in dire need. It is your birthright, my boy. As is the name I now restore to you. Aurelius Dumbledore.
He's not speaking to the flesh body in front of him. He is speaking to the Obscurus that he likely witnessed separated from Ariana. And as the Super Carlin brothers pointed out, the root word of Ariana is silver, and the root word of Aurelius is gold. And what is one of the qualities of the Philosopher's Stone? To turn any metal it touches into gold. I'm not going to lie. I felt a little bit defeated when it was Aberforth all along. It was a decently simple explanation that was probably brought on whenever Steve Kloves co-wrote the script with Rowling. I can imagine that conversation going, Rowling, listen. No. Let's just say he was Aberforth's son. Fine. But that is my one bit of revisionist history. That is my one bit of headcanon that I was going to share with you because I thought it made so much more sense. And it was Aberforth all along. But from here on out, we are going to finish the storylines that they started in the first three movies, introduce some new characters, and tie it all up with a nice little bow. So, where do we begin? I would be remiss. Nay, it would be a travesty if a series about fantastic beasts set inside the wizarding world did not feature one Rubeus Hagrid. For those of you who don't know, Rubeus Hagrid was born on December 6th of 1928 to, we can only assume, to Mr. Hagrid's dad and the giantess Friedwulfa. He attended Hogwarts between 1939 and 1940 and was subsequently expelled whenever he was wrongfully accused of opening the Chamber of Secrets. Why do we include Hagrid? I mean, other than the fact that he's Hagrid, his similarities to Newt are undeniable. A bit awkward, feels like a bit of an outsider, obsessed with things with stingers and fangs and claws and teeth, who was also wrongfully expelled from Hogwarts. Like, listen, this is a Baby Grogu level of inclusion to guarantee that this movie succeeds. Aragog even tells Ron and Harry when they are in the forest that he came to Hagrid, depending on the source that you get it from, either from a faraway land or in the pocket of a traveler. Newt obviously forms a bond with a kindred spirit, such as Hagrid, and as a result of possibly Hagrid helping Newt out with part of his mission in assisting Dumbledore, as a wink and a nod, don't tell anybody treat, gives the young egg of Aragog to Hagrid. And as we have said before, the Chambers of Secret was opened in 1942. The franchise is called Fantastic Beasts. Having a storyline that includes this legendary monster of Salazar Slytherin, the King of the Serpents? Come on! And in a detail that some may have overlooked, in this series, I believe we are going to see Hagrid save Dumbledore's life in some form or fashion, probably with some fantastical monster, because the very first chapter of the very first book establishes that Dumbledore trusts Hagrid with his life. And just one final note here. Has anyone else found it odd the amount of magic that Hagrid was able to do in the Harry Potter series with what was supposed to be a broken wand? Sure, the very when he tries to transfigure Dudley, all he manages was a tail and says, oh, I tried to turn him into a pig, but I guess he was so much like one, there was not much left to do. Human transfiguration doesn't happen until the sixth year. We even see Crumb tries to transfigure himself into a shark in the lake and only manages the head. Hagrid was expelled in his third year. However, we do see him light a fire. We do see him increase the speed of the boat. We do see him engorge the pumpkins whenever it comes to the Halloween feast. And we see him produce water to try and put out his cabin whenever his cabin is set on fire. This wasn't shown in the movies, but in the book, when Harry has the Elder Wand, he takes the pieces of his Holly Wand out and repairs them with the Elder Wand. The Elder Wand has the capability of repairing a wand and then puts the Elder Wand to rest with Dumbledore. At the end of this series, whenever Dumbledore defeats Grindelwald, he will have the Elder Wand. I think, as a token of gratitude for Hagrid for saving his life, not only is he going to repair the broken pieces of Hagrid's wand, he's gonna inconspicuously hide it inside of a pink umbrella as a way of saying thanks. And that is one Rubeus Hagrid. Now let's talk about that pesky transfiguration professor, Minerva McGonagall. When the second Fantastic Beasts movie was released, the internet did what the internet does, and they dug into every single detail and Easter egg that they could find, and there was a discrepancy that was shouted loudly from the rooftops. Regarding Professor McGonagall, the fan base had done fan base math, and when she was confronted by Professor Umbridge during her inspection, and she noted the number of years that she'd been teaching at Hogwarts, people elucidated that since she worked at the ministry for 2 years after graduating Hogwarts before she became a professor, that her birthday was 1935. How on earth is she then not only old enough to have taught Newt and Leta in, we're guessing roughly 1910, but also to have been by Dumbledore's side through 1927, 1932 for the last one? I have a theory. It all depends on whether... It all depends on whether or not you accept Harry Potter and the Cursed Child as canon. Okay, bear with me. Spoilers for Harry Potter and the Cursed Child if you ever plan on going and seeing it. But there are basically souped up time turners in Harry Potter and the Cursed Child. That we're not talking one turn per hour. This allows you to go years, even decades, back into the past. That has been established. That is part of Harry Potter canon. You can go back decades. There are time turners that let you go back decades. And inside of the Harry Potter series, who is the professor that, number one, not only identifies herself in a young Hermione Granger, but has the forethought and the knowledge to give her a time turner so she can attend classes? It's Professor McGonagall. And this is the part that I think ties it all together. We know that initially, when Dumbledore is conspiring with Grindelwald, they want to make wizards reign supreme. And that was an initial drive for them to try and unite Hallows. However, after Ariana died, his desire to be Master of Death, I think, was only driven by the fact that he could possibly bring Ariana back. We know that he is a purveyor of quirky silver magical instruments. I also don't think it's beyond the realm of possibility that Dumbledore acquired a time turner that would let him go back years. And he did so in an attempt to see if he could rewrite time to bring Ariana back. And I don't think he was ever successful. Now, let's get a little mind trippy. When Harry uses the time turner to go back in time in The Prisoner of Azkaban, he witnesses himself saving himself. He knew that he was able to cast the Patronus because he saw himself doing it. In that isolated bubble of time travel, things happened because they always happened. He knew he was able to do it because he had already done it. Okay, bear with me here. Okay, so we know that it was Dumbledore that defeated Grindelwald. But that level of power and that big of a duel, I think, could have had seismic ramifications on all of the surrounding towns, all of the surrounding people, and Dumbledore's army, essentially, at that point, were working to help save as many people around them as they could. And I think because the initial birthday for Minerva McGonagall was 1935, I think that Minerva ends up saving her pregnant mother. I think Dumbledore knows this, or at least finds out. But McGonagall, when she is in the past, she does not. I think we're going to witness another event where Dumbledore has to, number one, ask too much of a young, impressionable student who looks up to him and withhold information. It creates a paradox. She has to go back into the past, because if she doesn't, she doesn't exist. But we know she does because she already did it. I'm getting the same, like, mind-numbing excitement that I got the first time that I read The Prisoner of Azkaban. So that's Professor McGonagall. It allows her to be born in 1935. It allows her to be teaching there in the 1920s. She simply leaves to go back to the future before her younger self starts school. I know it's a bit outlandish, but I think this is one of my favorite theories that I have for this series. Now, for just a few more, I think it's fairly safe to say that Nagini, at this point in the series, is in her Kristoff Without Anna era, you know. Lost in the woods. When she will meet another young, brooding, but this time devilishly charming individual by the name of Tom Riddle. And if he at this point can convince Helena Ravenclaw of giving up the location of her mother's lost diadem, I think he can probably convince a young, vulnerable Nagini to join his cause. And then finally, and most importantly, I would argue, is the will they, won't they of Newtina. Well, never fear. If you are as deeply steeped in the Harry Potter universe as I am and have explored the vast array of materials outside of the original books, then you will already know the fate of that relationship. But for those who don't, I would like to read the last paragraph in the About the Author section of the very first release of Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them in 2001. Newt Scamander was awarded the Order of Merlin, second class, in 1979 in recognition of his services to the study of magical beasts, magizoology. Now retired, he lives in Dorset with his wife, poor Patina, and their pet measles, Hoppy, Millie, and Mauler. So, Newtina wins. And that is how I would finish the Fantastic Beasts series. I think a Wizarding Cinematic Universe is imminent based on conversations that Warner Brothers have had, and the flashback into Tom Riddle's diary regarding the opening of the Chamber of Secrets is the perfect springboard to do so. I'm going to end today, and hopefully every other episode that we do here inside of Potter Plus, by highlighting a creator inside the wizarding world. Someone who is taking the inspiration of the Harry Potter saga and the wider wizarding world at large and using it just to make the most lovely, exciting, and intriguing things. And the first one that we're going to highlight today is Jessica Stewart, Jess Dreams of Magic on Instagram. If I could give you one word to describe the entire vibe of her account, it's just comfort. So much so, and I think she is self-aware of it enough to know that she has also started a podcast called The Cozy Common Room, which is bedtime stories for Harry Potter lovers. They're all original stories. Go give her account some love. She's doing fantastic work over there. And that's it. First full episode of Potter Plus in the books. I really do hope that you've loved it. I have had an absolute blast coming up with these theories, doing all the planning for this, the production. It's a dream come true for me, honestly. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you for listening. Potter Plus is a production of the Grapefruit Network. If you want to find out more about this show, go to potterplus.show. And if you'd like to find out more about the other shows inside of our network, visit grapefruitnetwork.com. I am currently also podcasting on A Doctor and a Lawyer Walk Into a Bar, our chat show where we nerd out and play games that I started with my brother, and we've got two other friends that join us week to week. And if your nerddom extends down deep enough, we also have a narrative play role-playing game called The Big Red Button that is set in the Fallout universe. And I got as close to being a Harry Potter character in that show as I could be playing a neurotic British robot. The best way to keep in touch and keep up to date with what's happening at the Grapefruit Network is to join our newsletter, The Peel. I will link everything down in the show notes. And if you want more Harry Potter content from me, find me on Instagram at KentuckyWizard. But that's it for this one. I hope you have a magical day. And remember, you're just the same as I am.
Once upon a time, there was a girl named Luna, and this is the story of Luna and the unicorn.
She has a unicorn?
Mm-hmm. Once upon a time, Luna found a unicorn. She kept it as her pet and put it in the farm with her brother.
The unicorn's brother or Luna's brother?
Luna's brother.
Luna's brother. What's his name?
You'll be the boys and I'll be the girls.
Oh, okay. What's his name?
Oh! Hello, brother. I found a new pet for our garden.
Hi, sister. What kind of pet did you find?
A unicorn.
Is it a baby unicorn or a grown-up unicorn?
A baby and a grown-up.
Babies are gold?
Yes.
You did. Okay.
So, Luna and the unicorn were riding. So, he put a saddle and she dressed up as a cowgirl. Instead of being a Hogwarts girl anymore, she decided to be a cowgirl. Yeehaw, she said. The unicorn, she ripped the horn off of the unicorn. Nice, it said. And now it's a horse. So when that happened, she said, yeehaw. And the horse started running. And she was catching all kinds of villains.
Luna was catching villains?
Yeah. And she met Princess Peach.
Princess Peach. And they became best friends, didn't they?
Yeah.
And they lived happily ever after?
Yes!